On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about what happens when interest rates rise this week. We know it's going to affect real estate, but what else is it going to do? And we are going to talk to the woman who once upon a time played the little girl who was the girl in the red coat in the movie Schindler's List. She lives in Poland now, and she is doing amazing things, along with many others, to help in the war at the border. She is doing things to bring refugees into her country and volunteering. It is a great example of art imitating life in some very unusual way. We'll talk to her. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
We learned today that Gilbert Gottfried, the comedian, passed away. And as soon as I heard that Gilbert Gottfried had died today, I immediately thought of what was probably, arguably, almost certainly the funniest thing that ever happened on Hamilton television. Let's play a clip of this. This was, I'm not even sure the year of this. This was Karen Cumming, who was a reporter at the time, in the middle of an interview with Gilbert Gottfried, who says something, and this happens.
But that's because I had an incident. I once shoplifted something. It was a personal item.
I can't do this anymore. Please. See, I told you. Oh, okay, we have to ask you.
Well, that was very frightening. I just watched a woman have a fit.
There you go. Karen Cumming is with us now. That is your claim to fame, is it not? I mean, that's what lives on for you for eternity.
If people remember me for nothing else but that interview with Gilbert Gottfried, I will die a happy woman. It's the most fun I ever had on TV. And to this day, whenever I watch it, and every once in a while, if I'm having a bad day and I feel like I need a good laugh, I'll pull it out and I'll watch it. It makes me howl. And I hope that it has that effect on other people too.
Well, it does. It does, because I hear about it often. And it was the first thing I thought of. And I saw some other people said the same thing when we heard that he died. What in the world did he say that caused that?
I remember it like it was yesterday. He had been to the station to appear on the morning show with Bob Cowan. And I was the early morning reporter that day. And the assignment editor said to me, why don't you go into the back parking lot with Gilbert and do an interview with him, and we'll edit it and use it later in the day. And the first thing I said to them was, you know, I don't know anything about Gilbert Gottfried. I didn't even know that he was the voice of the Iago the parrot in Aladdin. I knew nothing about him except that he was a comedian. So we go down to the back parking lot, and I start off by suggesting to him that, you know, it must be hard for you being so recognizable. I bet you can't go anywhere without people, you know, coming up to you and wanting to have pictures with you and get your autograph and all that kind of thing. I bet you can't even go to Walmart without this kind of thing happening. And that's when he chimes in and says that the last time he went to Walmart, he was arrested for shoplifting. I think it was a personal item. And as soon as I heard, I think it was a personal item, I totally lost it.
I got to tell you, when I I don't know if my wife and daughter who were home today, I don't know if they'd heard that before. So I played it for them before the show today. And Karen, it caught their ear, but you know what else it did? Our dogs were looking outside, I think thinking there were birds outside. The dogs were concerned.
That does not surprise me at all, because I'm sure it has set off many a dog over the years.
I'm sure it has.
In the stratosphere somewhere.
When that happened right away, was the reaction right away? Did you get feedback immediately?
Well, what happened was, after we finished, and, you know, that was pretty much the end of the interview, and we said goodbye to him, and he went on his way, we took it back upstairs to the newsroom, and they, if my memory serves me correctly, they ran it unedited on the noon show. And as soon as it hit the noon show, I'm no word of a lie, my phone started ringing. People started calling me to ask me, you know, how did that happen? And, oh, my gosh, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. And then years down the road, a friend of mine posted it on Facebook, really when Facebook was in its infancy. And we've been lucky enough to get almost 500,000 views, which I know isn't viral, but, you know, that's 500,000 people over time who have gotten a really wonderful laugh when they needed it.
Well, I would suggest that that, and when you mentioned Bob Cowan, when Bob Cowan tried to introduce the Mighty Ducks and used the wrong consonant before the word ducks live on the air, that those may be the two for CHCH that have got the most play and the most traction on social media anywhere. And you know what? I mean, again, if why not? If you're going to be famous for something, why not something like that?
I can't think of anything I'd rather be famous for. And honestly, I thought about this before we got talking, and I really believe that Gilbert is sending us a message to all of us during this really challenging time in history. And that message is to laugh, to connect with the joy that lives deep inside ourselves, and to feel the enormous pleasure of laughing. And if that is his legacy, I think it's a wonderful one.
It is. It was a hilarious thing to happen, and lucky you that you got to be the one. Although,
exactly.
Again, you probably have people now who want to hear a repeat of that, and I don't know. You might pull something if you do that again. So, Karen Cumming,
yes,
one-time CHCH reporter. Really appreciate this. Thanks for jumping in quickly today.
Thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate you honoring Gilbert's memory like this.
Again, Gilbert Godfrey, who died today, it's very sad. But you can go find, and also, you know, we can only play it over the air here because it's radio, but go look online, just type in Gilbert Godfrey reporter laughing or laughter or whatever. You will find it. It is pretty darn funny.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
We are hearing that tomorrow, in all likelihood, the Bank of Canada is going to get pretty aggressive and raise our interest rates by 0.5 point, which is, we haven't seen this in a while. And every expert says there are going to be some significant implications from this. Let me turn to one of those experts. He is a guy that you know from listening to 900 CHML here, because every Saturday morning at 8 right here, he has Planning Your Financial Future. He is a financial expert to handle all this kind of stuff. His name is Don Fox. He joins us now. Don, thanks for this.
Hey, anytime, Scott.
So the obvious thing here, when we hear that the Bank of Canada, and then it's going to filter down, but when interest rates are going up, the obvious thing that everyone thinks about, this is going to have an effect on the real estate market, correct? It has to.
Eventually. You know, there's a kind of a double edge on that. Sometimes when they talk about interest rates rising, it's like a rush to, like the horse is running to the barn. They say, okay, I better get in before the interest rates rise. And so you're seeing a lot of people get these pre-approved mortgages right now, getting those last minute rates before they rise. And you're getting a bit of a, you know, backlog of these. So they're still getting the old rates, and you can hold those for about 120 days at most institutions, but that will run out. And yes, I would agree. Real estate prices, they should go hand in hand. Now, part of the reason real estate prices rose so quick was the drop of interest rates. So you would expect the flip side to occur, because now your mortgage payment inevitably will start to go up.
There is a question, though, about what real impact it's going to have on prices. And the reason that some people are doubting it is our supply of homes is so low that some are saying, Don, yeah, this is going to squeeze some people out of the market, but you're probably still going to have 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 bidders, where you might have had 5 or 6 or 7 or 15 before, but you're not wiping out the market. Is that what you see likely to happen?
Real estate isn't like the stock market, where there's an immediate kind of a reconciliation in terms of price. People say, you know what, if I can't sell it at this price, I'll just sell it later. So it's not as efficient as the stock market, but it is eventually efficient. It seems to be a bit of a lag time. So yes, as far as bidders go, likely there'll be less bidders. And I think you're already starting to see some people being a little bit more selective, just with these, you know, the latest increase in 0.25% and the potential future increases that we're already been talked about. This is like the worst kept secret for quite some time. We've all known interest rates were going to be going up. And now that they're going up, it's like, okay, how does it affect me? Weirdly enough, when interest rates go down, nobody really worried about them, of course, when on the way down. And it always works that way. But as they go up, it's like, okay, how is this going to affect me on my monthly payment?
All right. So, and again, I think most people can, even if you're not a financial expert, you can see the obvious real estate implications of this, even if it takes a little bit of time for this to kick in. What about elsewhere in the financial world? When interest rates go up, what other implications does that have on people's savings, on their investments, on their life in some other way?
Well, actually, when interest rates start to go up, there generally is an influx of savers, because there's no incentive to save when interest rates were 0-1%. You know, GICs 5 years were about 1%. And so, you know what, why save it there? And now you start looking, okay, well, now I can get maybe 2% in a GIC. Maybe I can get a long-term bond at 3%. So you generally start seeing people start to gravitate to those investments a bit more rather than riskier assets, such as things that pay dividends, albeit they're not that risky, but at the same time, they do have a little bit more risk. So as interest rates rise, people start to increase their fixed income investments a bit. So that, you know, absolutely, there is that part of the investment side.
There is also, and you know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but there are lots of experts out there who are saying, you know, we're seeing signs of a recession maybe looming on the horizon, or, you know, the stock market may be pulling back a bit. When you factor in interest rate increases and some worries that some people are having, what does that do?
Well, the stock market is very efficient, as I just mentioned, and it's kind of already factored in a lot of these increases. And they're usually about 6 months ahead of time in terms of that. But things like, you know, line of credits, people with lines of credits, they're going to be affected immediately, and they're going to see that impact on their on their payment immediately. Like the next month, you'll see an increase. People with variable mortgages, they're going to see that right away. So it hits home more when they see it on paper. You know, it's one thing to talk about it, but the other thing is to say, wow, I used to pay $3,800 a month. Now I'm paying $4,200 a month on that $800,000 mortgage because interest rates went up 1%. And that's a big difference. All of a sudden you're out $400 a month, and that money's got to come from somewhere. Yeah. And that's usually discretionary money, money that they're spending on, you know, vacations. Not that we've been doing a lot in the last couple of years, but, you know, more of the things that are not things you need, more of the things you want.
But this seems like this is such a, maybe necessary, but such a bad time for this then, with inflation and the cost of living going up and everything so much. This may be necessary to happen, but boy, it seems like it's going to kick some people hard.
Yeah, in terms of a recession, that's the one they are worried about. You know, if you raise them too fast, as you alluded to, there is always that concern. What if it starts to initiate a recession? Now, that is two negative quarters in terms of growth. And so, you know, recession, a lot of people think, okay, it's like they always talk about depression. And it's not the worst thing. It's always a cleansing. Nobody wants to go through a recession, but it does happen. But that's what they're trying to avoid. The country does not want, after a pandemic, to go into a recession. And by interest rates rising too quickly, they are definitely worried about that. So yeah, I wouldn't want to be in the government's position, but with inflation rates running at 5.7% right now, they haven't been that way since 1991 when they were 6%. So they have to do something. And this is what normally happens. Interest rates go up as inflation goes up to try to control that.
One last thing. We got time for one more, and that's this. When the interest rates are basically almost at zero, there's really, if we do go into a recession, if there are financial problems, there's not much the government can do to stimulate the economy. Is bringing these interest rates back up allowing us to reset, so when the next trouble hits, we at least have somewhere to go and something to do to help fix things or stimulate things?
Absolutely. No, that's definitely a good point there, Scott. It's almost like an arrow in your quiver. We haven't had that because they're trying to stimulate the economy during the pandemic. They lowered them basically to 0% and they ran out of room. You can't have negative interest rates. So now as they put them back up again, they've always got that back in, you know, kind of an ace up their sleeve that they can now lower them if they do need to stimulate the economy. So it is good to have interest rates up there a little bit. It's painful for those that may have overextended themselves in the last couple of years. There certainly is a lot more debt per capita in Canada. And so you're going to have an impact there, depending on people have, you know, manage that debt in the last couple of years, whether they locked in at a low rate and they won't have an effect on it. But those that have variable rates or line of credits, they're going to feel it right away.
That is Don Fox. You can hear more about this and other things every Saturday morning, 8 o'clock a.m. right here on 900 CHML, Planning Your Financial Future. Don, really appreciate it as always. Thanks for the time.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
You have probably seen the movie Schindler's List at some point. It was a harrowing telling of the story of the Holocaust, which really, I think we would all probably agree, was humanity's darkest point. Well, in that movie, the hope was portrayed by a little girl who was wearing a red coat throughout that movie. If you've seen it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, we are not, I don't think, I'm quite sure, we're not at that level of horror in Ukraine yet, right now. However, what is happening there is certainly truly terrible. Civilians are being bombed. Millions are fleeing for safety. It is a horrible, horrible situation. And we're now hearing that things could be about to get worse with new Russian aggressions or whatever else that we're hearing may be coming. Well, if there is a bright spot in this, and maybe there is, it is that volunteers from all over the place are coming to help those at the borders, doing what they can to help, to do whatever it is that needs to be done, including my next guest, who has been working at the Polish border to help refugees. Now, I mentioned Schindler's List. I brought that up because she is not just a volunteer, but she is also the woman who played the little girl in that red coat in the movie. Her name is Aluja Dąbrowska, and she joins me now from Poland. Thank you for taking time today to do this.
Oh, thank you very much also. And I am very glad I can talk with you right now. So hello, Canada.
You have, and we heard about you doing this because you've been posting some of what you've been doing and seeing on social media over the last number of days. And I got to tell you, this sounds, what you're describing, it sounds really, really, really difficult what you've been going through.
I think it's more difficult for the refugees from Ukraine, and I cannot compare with them. It's difficult for me sometimes, not physically, sometimes mentally, because when I see so many suffering people, I will never forget it. But also it's difficult last few days to manage everything, because like you said, I post information about my work on the Instagram, and now I have a lot of messages and a lot of people want to thank me or offer help. So for me, it's a great thing.
Where are you located when you're doing your work? Where are you relative to where everything is going on?
Mostly in car, because I transport people. Not only me. I have a dream team with my mother, because she is also a volunteer and she has a car driver license. I do not have, so I coordinate our actions, and she is driving. So we transport people from the border to many cities in Poland. But when I am not in the car, I am usually at home in the city at the border with my phone and my computer, and I am trying to coordinate a lot of activities of my group, because I am a member of the group of volunteers. Mm-hmm. And I am one of the persons who can manage this. But I am not only one, I am just a part of those this group. So this is important to say it. I am very thankful for all my friends, volunteers friends. They are amazing people, and it's not just me.
Sure.
You know it is. So it's not like that, but I am physically work as a volunteer at the border. Mostly I am in the move. I don't know how to say it.
Yes, but you have spent time there though, and I'm wondering, when you're there, There was a young man from where you're talking to, from Hamilton in Ontario, who went over there to help. He had a thing he was doing, and he came on with us and was talking. And what he described at the border, the things he saw, the things he heard, it sounded so overwhelming. Is that what you experienced?
Yes, it's not overwhelming because you can't prepare for what you will see there. I thought I am prepared because we have a lot of information here, but here in Poland. But when I went there first time, it was hard to deal with this. It was hard to believe this is happening. It was like the scene from the movies, but little bit different, because in movies when you watch this usually there are people who's screaming, who's crying a lot, children's crying, but no, there was silence, not completely silence of course, because they was talking, but the real suffer was in their eyes. The scream was in their eyes, and this is what I can't forget, and this is what will stay with me, I think, forever. Those people are completely lost. Those people are completely confused, and they just need to, they just want to survive. Mothers just want to care about children. They are looking for a safety place for them. And mothers with children is almost 90% of all those people. Also, there are elderly persons. And I've seen grown-up men just twice, and wow. I saw thousands of people.
And I was going to say, when you talk about that it's silent, it's not that there's not many people. There are tens of thousands of people coming across that border, correct?
Yeah, but they are... It's like a fake calm, because they act like calm persons, but I know there are not. They are traumatized, they are stressed, but they are not loud. Children don't cry, even little babies don't cry. Mostly they are really, really tired, and when you are tired, you can't scream, you can just trying to survive.
What do you, or do you say anything, especially with the children? Is there anything that you can say, or do you just, what do you do?
What am I doing with children? Because I don't have specific work with on the border, at the border, I'm sorry, with children and grown-up women. I'm sorry.
It just seems, Olivia, it just seems that it sounds almost, it sounds very hopeless. Is that a fair word?
Yes. Yes. And that is why we need to help them, and why we need to care of them. I think it is our responsibility to take care of them, because we need to give them hope. And when they see how many people are volunteers, they can believe that not everything is bad. They can believe us, and they have faith in their future, because they lost of almost everything. It's not important. They was rich, they was poor. They lost almost everything because they lost safety. They lost this feeling that they have their own place on the world. Not anymore, because they lost them. They was forced to leave homes, to leave families, sometimes to leave their roots. And we, volunteers, need to tell them, need to show them it's not everything lost. There is still hope. There's still hope for them, and they can help quite normal, just maybe a piece of normal life here. And they want to have a normal lives. They usually talk about finding job or something like this.
When you say normal life, by the way, what do you do in your normal life?
I am a copywriter.
Okay.
I'm self-employed, but I am also a former librarian. I have a master's degree in librarian science, and books and words are a love of my life.
So what made you decide that you had to go and get involved and volunteer? What was it that spurred you to do this?
There was no one specific reason, because first of all, when war started, I was very afraid. I have mental illness, I have anxiety, and it was a very hard situation for me. But after 3 days, I have a very important talk with my friend, my close friend. And this conversation gave me, encouraged me. My friend encouraged me. We wasn't talk about Ukraine or something like that, but sometimes when you talk with a close friend and you don't need to say everything, and he understand me because we are connected, because we both have mental illness, we both had hard moments in the lives, and I don't know how exactly it happened, but this conversation cheered me up. And next day I decided to change my fear to activity, to do something good. And I just called my mother. I asked her, are we going to the border? And she said, yes, of course, I'm ready. So that is how it started. And then I joined a group of volunteers, this group, GSRUA, Grupa Szybkiego Reagowania Ukraina in Polish. And I started to do everything I can.
It's good for you. It's so good that you're doing this. And you mentioned the anxiety, and I only bring that up again because one of your posts mentioned that there had been bombings quite near you where you were set up. When you go and do your work, are you scared that the bombings are that close?
No, absolutely. No. The fear was in those first 3 days, and after that, no. Fear is something that you need to manage with, and thinking there is no fear, because fear is a normal emotion, but if you can manage this, if you can deal with this, you are sometimes afraid, you are not afraid anymore. Mm-hmm. In this specific situation. So no, I don't feel fear since then.
Something that I read from someone else who was helping at the border, and I don't know their name, I read it in a story somewhere. Their biggest, the thing that upsets them the most, besides seeing the people as you've described, is the sense that there's just too many people to possibly help. It's just that they feel sad, not just because of what's happening, but they can't do enough. Is that the feeling when you get, when you see just these seas of people coming across the border?
I feel it every day, because I know whatever I will do, it won't be enough. Never. It won't be enough, because the needs are bigger than our volunteers' possibilities. That is exactly why I started to post on Instagram, and that is why I started to do interviews, and I'm talking with you right now, because I decided to use my image from Schindler's List to involve people around the world. It wasn't my idea, actually. One of my followers, also my friend Adam, he's an artist, told me that we can do it. He made this artwork, the girl in the blue dress on the yellow background. And this was the moment when I realized I can do something good. And after almost 30 years, I can finally use this this part of my life use something I did when I was child to change it to do something good. Because please ask.
There was a time you mentioned how you were proud of that role now, but was there a time when that was a difficult thing for you? I read somewhere that once upon a time you were ashamed of that and that you were actually angry with your parents for letting you go in that movie. Is that true?
No. This is something I hate because, of course, there was a situation with press in 2013, I guess. I had an interview to the English paper, and I wasn't speak English very well. I thought I am, but I wasn't. And I didn't understood some questions. I used not properly words. After this, newspaper changed it for article, And then another papers completely changed the sense of what I said. And it was like a chain. And I was very surprised when I was reading this Schindler's List destroyed my life or something, because this is not true. This is not true. And I want to say it. I had a difficult part in my life, and I have my own trauma. This is something very, very hard for me. But this trauma has nothing to do with Schindler's List.
Because that character is one of the most, what's a good word here? Memorable, I guess is a good word. One of the most memorable characters. You didn't speak, but it's one of the most memorable characters in any movie ever. Anyone who's seen that, it was not just memorable, but it was so moving what you did. And it was, probably in the scheme of things, it was a very small role, but boy, was it ever memorable.
I just want to say something. Another thing to the former question. No, past the question before this.
Yes.
I want to say my only scene in this whole situation was when I was a child, I didn't realize how much important it was. And and when I grown up, I realized this, because it's a normal process. When you are a kid, you don't understand a lot of things, and I really don't know how it's happened. I think this is, there is my fault too. I think I said something I didn't mean that, because I didn't know how to say in English, but let this situation in the past. There was very good. After this situation, there was also good things, because I had connected with a lot of people around the world, and there was very nice. There were very nice. So this is one thing I wanted to say. Okay. So could you repeat your next question?
Yeah, sure. It is you're not a historian, I understand.
No.
But do you look at, you've watched that movie now, I bet, many times. And you've now been on the border and you've seen, do you see any similarities, or is saying something like that just too much? Is it too far to say that there could be any similarities?
Of course I see similarities, but not only at the border, in all this situation, or all this war, because it's really hard for me, because war is war, and when innocent people die, when innocent children die, it will be never fair. And this is quite similar situation, but I really don't want to compare this situation. Oh, I really want to compare war in Ukraine and Second World War, because there is nothing to compare there.
It's difficult.
It's different and similar in the same way. Oh, I know how to say it in Polish, but no. I think I don't know how to say it in Polish.
You've done exceptionally well. You really have. And I think people understand exactly what you're saying. And yeah. I have to let you go because I know you have things to do. But first of all, I mean, good for you for using this opportunity to try and help for you for going there, but also for using your role and your fame from that movie to draw attention to this and to help. That is Aluia Dobroska, who was the girl in the red coat from Schindler's List and is now on the border helping with refugees from the war. Aluia, thank you so much for taking the time today. We really appreciate it.
Yes, and I thank you, and it was a pleasure for me.
That was our discussion from a little bit earlier. Again, the time difference in Poland didn't make it possible to do it live, but Olivia wanted to point out, and I said I absolutely would, that part of the reason why she is using this story about her past and about being that character in Schindler's List and bringing this up again is to try to raise money to help with the refugees. There's so many needs there. So I cannot, and I apologize, I cannot pronounce the name of the charity. It is a Polish name. It is a long Polish name. So if you are interested in donating or directing some money or doing something to help her and the people who are there working at the border and helping people coming across, a couple of ways you can do this. The simplest is go on Facebook and just type in GSR, as in Gordon Susan Robert, space UA. That is the name of the charity. That's the group. That will take you to information that you need. GSR space UA. If you're on Instagram, at @GSR_UA. And if you want to get to Aluia's own Instagram page, it's OLIWIA, Aluia.Dobroska, DABROWSKA. You can find that on Instagram, and that will also offer you links to where you want to go if you wish to help in some way. The need, we know she and I talked for a few minutes after we were finished, and the need is, as she says, just totally immense, just overwhelmingly immense. And so if you wish to help, I'm sure that it would be very much appreciated. Again, GSR space UA on Facebook is the best way to find out. And then if you go there, you'll see some more information about what the group is and what they're doing and some photos from that area and other things. So take a look.
The Scott Radley Show, weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode, and also be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.